Podcasting.
Welcome to The Arts Hole. This is the podcast where we take apart pieces of art and see if we can put them back together again just a little bit better. My name's Bea Roberts. I'm a script writer and a script doctor. With me I have Mr. Luke Hayes.
I'm a postman currently.
Currently a postman an author.
Yeah, but mostly the first one.
And on the floor, of course, we have Disco the Podcast Puppy.
Who is just, again, ignoring us. That's
so
fine.
So tuckered out. She had a big long walk.
We did. We got lost.
We did get lost. But then we're back. And it's Christmas.
It's Christmas time. Something of a bleak mood, I think it's justified. Because we were thinking about, what haven't we done Christmas-wise? And we realised neither one of us had ever seen The Polar Express.
Yes, the terrifying, uncanny valley Tom Hanks-a-thon.
Yes, Polar Express. So, all aboard, everybody. We've just watched The Polar Express. Woo, what the fuck is that? Oh, God. Right.
So are you going to do a synopsis?
I am. It felt like it was about 3 days long.
It felt so long.
It's an hour and 40, but it just, God, it drags. So hopefully this synopsis is fairly short. I've kind of lost track of where I am. Anyway, as quickly as I can, and with a lot of the bullshit removed, a young boy who is skeptical about Santa is trying to stay awake all night on Christmas Eve, and then a weird magic train shows up outside his house.
Yep. The boy's voiced by Tom Hanks. His dad is voiced by Tom Hanks. The train conductor is voiced by Tom Hanks.
The boy is physically played in motion capture by Tom Hanks, but voiced by a different actual young boy.
So weird.
But his dad is Tom Hanks. And yes, the narrator is Tom Hanks. And everyone is Tom Hanks forever. And it's just Tom Hanks all the way down. Weird magic train shows up outside his house. The conductor, who is Tom Hanks, like everyone else, tells the boy that he should get on board as he hasn't been very Christmassy this year. And the train is going to the North Pole. The train is full of other kids. It feels weird, and we both separately thought about concentration camps. There's something about having, like, a child...
Abducted in the night in their pyjamas.
Yeah, a train full of unaccompanied children in a carriage going... So it's really weird.
And the train... I expected the Polar Express to be very, very magical. It's not. It's just like a normal train. Tom Hanks looks like a normal man. He's very officious and orders this child in the middle of the night to get on the train.
Yeah. Get on the train in the middle of the night, child in your pyjamas.
It's just full of other unaccompanied children who all just hope that they're going to the North Pole because that's what a man said, but they don't actually know.
Yeah. The train then stops on the wrong side of the tracks outside some poor asshole's house.
Oh, God.
And the poor kid, sensibly, doesn't want to get on board, right? Possibly because if you grow up on the wrong side of the tracks, you can get a bit more savvy about this kind of thing.
When strange men order you to do things.
Yeah, just random people turn up at your house and tell you to get into vehicles. It just seems like a... smart decision.
And I don't think that we're being overly po-faced. One of my biggest notes here is that this isn't magical enough. There's just a train.
It's just a train.
There's an angry man, and he's telling children in the middle of the night they have to get on it.
Yeah. It's not whimsical or heartwarming. It's just weird. Also, the poor kid, literally a boy in the striped pyjamas. He's literally got stripy pyjamas, which I don't think that had come out yet, so maybe that's not a thing.
No, I don't think so.
But still, it's an awkward one because he's the poor one and he's a boy in striped pyjamas. The poor kid then changes his mind and starts to run after the train, but he can't catch it because he's got rickets or polio or some poor people's shit. I don't know. His legs don't work. He's poor. He sucks. I don't think he does, but he can't catch the train.
He's the only child that will have a name. He's called Billy.
Yeah, his name is Billy, it turns out. The nameless main boy never gets a name in this.
No, they're called Hero Boy and Hero Girl.
In the credits, when you pause it. Nameless main boy pulls the emergency brake, causing the conductor to be mad at him, but the conductor relents when he learns that the reason was that he was trying to let the poor kid on the train.
Yep.
He's mad that they're going to be late, even though it's a magic train, right? He's like, we're going to be late and then Christmas will be held up, even though we're on a magic imaginary train that can go at any speed that it wants to.
Yeah, he's incredibly... Everyone in this film is really quite angry.
It's got a really aggressive tone for a family Christmas film. Yeah,
it does.
There's then a weird dance number while all the kids just serve hot chocolate. I've just got a note here that, like, dancing is pointless when it's all CGI. All the waiters are, like, doing backflips and stuff, but, like, a backflip is not impressive when you make a cartoon character do it, because it doesn't...
Yes, and do you know what? It's very similar to Be My Guest from Beauty and the Beast. But that is iconic. If you think about that, you can probably remember quite a lot of the central images of Be My Guest, right? Of like all the dancing, various different crockeries dancing, everything's dancing because it's a cartoon. This is so underwhelming, considering if you compare the two things, when they're basically a CGI song and dance number about
because it's all CGI
food.
Motion captured, right? So it's like We probably should have flagged that at the start. Everything in this is just people that have been like CGI'd in. So real people that have been overlaid with computer graphics to look cartoonish. So then it's real people doing a real dance number, but then made to look like cartoons. So it doesn't have the impossible movement of cartoon, which can let you do incredible things like having Crockery dancing.
Yeah.
It's just some guys doing some dancing, but doesn't really look like real guys. So it's not impressive in the way that real human movement is, because it's too stiff and awkward to be that.
Yeah.
But it's also not fun enough to be an actual cartoon, because
it just falls in the middle of both those
things. It's failing in both directions.
Yeah. But at least this is the kind of whimsy I was expecting when we got on board the Polar Express.
It's a swing and a miss at some whimsy there. The little girl on the train decides to take the boy in striped pyjamas some hot chocolate and leaves her ticket behind. Nameless main boy tries to take it to her, but it blows out of his hand, and we get a long CGI sequence of the ticket coming back again. This is the first of several such long sequences of like, look what we can do in CGI. So the ticket blows away and we follow it, and then it like gets... It blows along with a wolf pack for a while, and then a bird picks it up and swoops around with it, and we were going all swishy, swoopy CGI through the mountains and trees, and then
this is entirely made a sequence that is made for being in the cinema and going, ooh, in 2004.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to take a second with my notes here. I had to switch to shorthand, so I was taking so many notes, and I'm fucking stupid this all is. The conductor realises the girl has no ticket and takes her away. But Nameless Main Boy discovers that the ticket has somehow returned to the train through the magic of a wolf pack and an eagle and a bunch of other shit, and goes after them. They seem to have gone up onto the roof of the train for some reason, so he follows them up there and encounters a weird hobo who looks like Tom Waits, but is actually played by Tom Hanks, which is a weird crossover of Toms. Some sort of Tomception has happened with this strange hobo. The hobo says that he is the king of the North Pole, which is an actual hobo term from the 30s.
Is it?
Yeah. Basically, if you were the head hobo of a group, you were the king of the North Pole and that you're in charge, but there's nothing there, so it's pointless. I'm ruling over nothing. I'm ruling over a waste. It's also the name of a movie starring Lee Marvin about being a hobo, which was then retitled in the UK to just Emperor of the North rather than Emperor of the North Pole, because if it was called Emperor of the North Pole, they thought people would think it's a Christmas movie, which it's not. It's about being a hobo.
I would think it was about penguins.
Yeah, you can't win. But Emperor of the North and or Emperor of the North Pole is a hobo movie. So it is a real hobo term that is... Yeah, all right, I've digressed into my in-depth hobo lore.
That was an ADHD cul-de-sac brought to you by Luke Haynes.
Meanwhile, back at the podcast, there's a weird Tom Waits, Tom Hanks hobo. The boy says, isn't Santa meant to be the king of the North Pole? And Tom Waits Hanks asks the boy if he believes in Santa, which he isn't sure of. Then he asks him if he believes in ghosts before seeming to disappear.
Now, if you're thinking, this hobo might be comforting and warm... He's not.
No, he's not.
He's needlessly threatening.
He's quite creepy.
Everything in this universe is needlessly threatening.
It's quite aggressive.
When the conductor takes the girl off because she hasn't got the ticket for absolutely no fault of her own, which everybody admits that she just left it and he took it.
Yeah.
He, like, takes her off with the... And they, what the boy is worried about is that she's going to be thrown from the train in the middle of the fucking wilds.
Yeah.
It's... really dark, this movie.
The boy, convinced that he's dreaming, tries to wake up but can't. Then the hobo comes back and skis the boy to the front of the train. We get another bit of swishy CGI bullshit for a lot of this. Where the girl turns out to be unharmed and has been given the job of driving the train. As you pointed out, the little girl is the only black character, and they made her to work on Christmas because a white kid lost her ticket.
Yeah, right? She's been put to work.
She has to drive the train now to something that isn't her fault because a white kid lost her ticket. Yeah.
Uncomfortable.
It's got some issues. And again, the motion capture is provided by a black actress. It's not just... Yeah. I'm not sure where that would fall if it wasn't actually provided. If it was a white actress and they made her black in CGI, is that I'm not touching that with a barge pole. We're not getting into it. Anyway, there's some sort of weird slapstick shit going on at the front of the train with two hillbillies trying to change a light bulb. If that sounds like a non sequitur, it absolutely is. I'm just reporting what happens here.
And they're so grotesque, and it's really frightening.
There's like a weird skinny one and a weird fat one, and they're like...
Yeah, they're suddenly like cartoons. Because like Tom Hanks conductor just looks like Tom Hanks, right? Yeah. Everyone kind of looks like a normal person, but these people look like cartoon people. Like, there's no way that that's motion capture of actors who look like that.
Because
human beings don't look like that.
No, they've gone... Like, there's a weird skinny one with a hugely long beard down to his knees.
Yeah, they're cartoons. Very odd.
Strange. Anyway, they see light up ahead and think there's an oncoming train, so they tell the kids to stop the train, which the kids then do, upsetting the arsehole conductor once again. The light up ahead turns out to be the reflecting eyes of a reindeer that's on the track. They clear the reindeer by torturing the hillbilly engineer until his screams scare them off. Yes, really. That's actually what happens in this movie. I'm just going to gloss over it as the rest of the plot seems to. Setting off again, a lever breaks and the train runs out of control for another long CGI bit of a train out of control. We get a lot of like first person perspective of tracks whooshing by. And
it
squishy.
Really looks like the children all might be mangled horribly in an actual train accident is the effect
would
of
be,
that.
Would be on brand of this movie. Yeah. At one point they're saved from falling off by Tom Waits Hanks, who is now definitely a ghost because he then literally vanishes into the frost again. Having finally given the girl her ticket back, our soul conductor takes the kids back to their carriage via the car full of harrowing broken toys, which is against the needless. There's all these like broken they're going to be recycled at the North Pole into functional toys again, but for now they're all sort of twisted and broken. One of them is like a Scrooge puppet that's like
leers and shouts at the boy, and like while he's being attacked by a Scrooge puppet for not liking Christmas enough, two horrible clown puppets leer over his shoulders. It is horrible.
Yes.
It's more frightening than there's a really iconic scene in a movie, which I'm not going to remember the name of now.
You're going to have to give me more to go with than that.
It's called The Innocents. It's a black and white movie that is based on The Turn of the Screw, which I've been watching on repeat recently. And there's a very iconic scene of a haunting in an attic with creepy toys. It's like supposed to be one of the first creepy toy haunting things. Yeah. And this is 20 times more frightening with creepy toys.
Now back with the other kids, we get a maudlin musical number. We nearly cringed our faces inside out for that one.
Oh my god, I hated this.
Yeah, the poor kid, Billy. Sings a song about Christmas and the girl joins in and it's all...
She knows all the words and can harmonise with him.
Yeah, great. It goes on forever and I hate it every
second. It's so mawkish.
It's so twee. It's... arriving at the weird North Pole, it looks like a weird industrial town, and according to the trivia on IMDb, apparently it was modelled on like a rail yard in Illinois somewhere.
Happy Christmas! Yeah. It's the magic of Santa's North Pole!
By which I mean a train factory in Chicago.
Factory in Chicago! It's horrible industrial...
Just like we all picture it in our heads, yeah. Arriving at the weird North Pole, we are warned that at midnight Santa will give one of the kids the first gift. Yes, warned. The tone from the conductor, at Christmas he's going to give the first kid the first gift Christmas.
While he's shouting at them to line up.
Yeah, in an orderly queue. The kids line up to meet Santa, but the boy in striped pyjamas, Billy, doesn't want to, saying that Christmas never works out for him. This is one scene, after he sang a song about how magical Christmas is. There's no consistency in this. Yep. I've just got a note here that occurred to me in the middle of this. Like the romance of trains is a very boomer trope. We'll come back to that. The carriage the kids are in while they're trying to convince Billy to come and meet Santa becomes unhooked for no apparent reason and CGIs its way to some sort of magical crossroads that they have to find their way back from. Following the sound of sleigh bells that the main boy can't hear, they find the elves watching every kid on Earth on CCTV, which is creepy, in order to make the naughty list.
And for some reason, these children aren't CGI. These children are videos of human children.
This looks like real footage,
It is real footage. Yeah.
Odd. Yeah. It's like that scene in The Dark Knight where Bruce Wayne is like hacked into every phone in Gotham. And it's basically that, but Santa. Santa at his train factory in Chicago.
And if you're wondering what the elves are like, they're miniature, angry white men.
They look weirdly hard-bitten. They all look like fucking coal miners from Appalachia in the 30s. They got like hard faces and
they got like accents like this, like, oh my god, this fucking kid's busting my balls.
Yeah, look at this kid over here.
Look at this kid.
You gotta put him on the naughty list. It's a nice kid you got there, but you shouldn't be ended up on the naughty list, I'm just saying.
This ugly little fucker.
Yeah. Actually, one of them uses the phrase Meshuggah at some point, which means that the elves are Jewish, which is also slightly odd. they're not all...
They're really angry, because no one in this world's been angry enough.
It's weird. Seeing a present go past with his name on it, Billy grabs hold of it because he's poor and he's not going to get any other presents, so he won't let that fucking thing go for love nor money. This leads to more swooshy CGI bullshit, and they all end up in Santa's sack. My next note, it looks like a big dangling bollocks, and it's delivered by Blimp.
Such a bollocky looking sack.
It really is. It's an enormous bollock sack of presents that they hang from a blimp and deliver.
Red and pendulous and swinging.
It's red and sort of droopy. And like, they've... They've tried to CGI the fact that all the presents have corners, but it just looks like it's slightly sort of wrinkly effect.
Yeah, it does.
I can't describe it any better.
The blimps are quite long, so sort of these like sausage-looking objects with this sack in between.
Big sort of dangling pair of...
I can't believe no one called this at any point.
Yeah, there should have been a meeting somewhere about this. Anyway, big dangling bollocks there. As the terrifying elves hitch up the reindeer, Nameless Main Boy realises that he still can't hear the sleigh bells. He then tells himself that he believes, and that fixes everything. That's the entirety of the plot, basically.
Yeah.
He can now hear the sleigh bells. He says, I believe, and now he can hear the sleigh bells, and Santa turns up.
It only took for him to literally travel to the North Pole, be surrounded by elves, go to Santa's workshop, and suddenly he believes, because that's the meaning of faith and belief.
Yeah, just tell yourself you believe something, and that makes it true, right? That always works.
There's literally evidence.
Yeah.
There's so much mountains of evidence that it would be very strange if he didn't believe, if he was going, no, I'm not in the North Pole, although it does look like Chicago.
I was going to say, if I turned up at Santa's workshop and it looked like a train factory in Chicago, I would be less inclined to believe in Santa. Anyway, Santa turns up, he tells Billy that he's made new friends now and there's no better gift than friendship.
Santa talks like this.
As you said, it's Tom Hanks trying to do... Of course it's Tom Hanks as Santa, but he's doing this weird deep voice and he sounds like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me so hard. So Santa talks...
Do you believe in Christmas, Billy?
I believe in Christmas so hard. So he tells Billy that there's no better gift than new friends he's made. He tells the little girl to keep up the good work, and then he picks Nameless Main Boy to get the first gift of Christmas, because fuck you, Billy, you poor piece of shit. We thought, obviously, you're going to give the poor kid who has nothing the first gift of Christmas. That's the right thing to do here, but no, fuck him, he's poor. Fuck you, Billy.
All of the last 20 minutes have been about Billy.
Yeah.
Billy having a shit time. Before that, we had...
Yeah, turns out Christmas never works out for him, and he's right, because it doesn't.
The nameless black girl being really selfless, making sure that Billy got a hot chocolate because he was stuck outside. Yeah. She didn't get cross when she got nearly kicked off the train and put to work because someone stole her ticket. She'd been nothing but generous and selfless this entire time.
Yeah,
but
fuck
Santa's
her too.
Like, fuck her too, no.
Would you fuck you, Billy? Fuck Billy so hard.
Yeah, oh good. So this nameless kid who's really done very little to earn it gets the privilege of... And I was like, he's going to renounce it. He's going to say Billy deserves it, isn't
no,
he?
No, 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 fuck Billy. Fuck Billy, he's poor. I kept hearing in my head Cartman in South Park, Kenny, your family's poor, Kenny.
Yeah.
Main Boy can ask for any present in the world for the first gift of Christmas from Santa. So he asks for the bell off the sleigh that he can now hear, which Santa says, yeah, that's a wonderful gift. It's a wonderful symbol of Christmas, which it's not.
Now it puts the lotion on its skin.
Yeah. It puts the presents on the sack or else it gets the hose again. So it says it's a wonderful symbol of Christmas, which it isn't. It's just, that's weird. For about 4 seconds, we then see that one of the elves is being played by Steven Tyler of Aerosmith fame. Weird. Just weird, weird. And if you think that, like, Steven Tyler has a weird, creepy face for an elf, no, that's actually on brand. That actually fits perfectly with the weird, creepy elves. But also, Steven Tyler, you know.
Paedophile.
Paedophile, yeah. For those who don't know, had his, 15-year-old girlfriend, 16-year-old girlfriend, legally signed over so that he had guardianship of her.
He could cross state lines and have her in hotels.
Yes. Basically, like, had the parents sign her over to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm going to look up how old she is while you do that synopsis.
I keep doing that. I think Steven Tyler is now using gender-neutral pronouns, so I'm sorry, they are a paedophile. Anyway, Arsehole the Conductor literally punches each kid's moral lesson onto their ticket on the way back onto the train.
I hated
it. On the nose. Main Boy then realises that he's lost the magic bell that Santa gave him, but the train is already pulling away. The train drops Billy off where his present that he was clinging onto has already made it back ahead of him. Fuck you, Billy, you piece of shit. The train drops Main Boy off and the conductor tells him the most important thing about a train isn't where it's going, it's the decision to get on, meaning he understands worryingly little about trains for a conductor, because surely the entire point of a train is where it's going, that's what they're for. Anyway, the train departs and Main Boy waves to Arsehole the Conductor and to Tom Waits Hanks, the ghost of Vagrancy Past, who is briefly visible again and then disappears. Main boy wakes up in his bed and finds there is a little box under the tree. It has his magic bell in it, and Tom Hanks, narrating, says that over time, all the other kids lost the ability to hear the bell, but he still hears it, and so does everyone else who truly believes. Vomit the end.
Hey! Well done, well done.
Let's remember the true meaning of Christmas. Fuck Billy.
Okay. So, it is. I try always to say things I like. I struggle with this one. The music's quite good in some bits of it.
Some of it is okay. I'm sure some of the swooshy CGI stuff was fun in IMAX, for example.
Like, I think that the sequence where the ticket is, you know, it's picked up by an eagle and then it falls from the nest and then it, like, goes through and the journey it takes, it goes back into the train. You don't think it's going to go back in the train. Like, that's quite a good sort of action sequence. Yeah. And I'm sure it was incredibly sort of mind-blowing when you saw it in the cinema for the first time. And we can't blame this film for being old. Like,
no.
You know, and its appeal of, like, oh, this is new technology is partly why we're doing this. So, you know, I think that's fine.
Yes, but Robert Zemeckis was so obsessed with whether or not he could. He didn't stop to think about whether or not he should.
And the only other bit I've got is there's a bit when they went up a mountain. A bit where the train.
It's a good shot, yeah. The train winds up the outside of a mountain.
And because the reason that it's good is because it looks impossible. Yes. It looks like a thing a real train couldn't do.
Yeah.
And it looks magical and whimsical, which is what I was expecting this Christmas movie about a magic train to be like. I didn't think it was going to be more about, like, industrial disputes and hobos.
But not in a fun way.
So, okay, some problems with this, and then we'll move on to our fixes.
Yes,
so,
okay.
I don't know if you do want to just briefly explain the Uncanny Valley in case people don't know.
Yeah, the Uncanny Valley is a concept in robotics or in artificial intelligence where basically, as a rule of thumb, people like robots that look recognisably human. And if you plot how much they like a robot looking like a person, on a graph, the amount they like it goes up in a curve.
So the more human it is, the better.
Yeah, exactly. Up to a point where it starts to look a bit too much like us, and then the amount they like it drops off a cliff and suddenly goes down to zero.
Yeah.
And that drop off in the chart is referred to as the uncanny valley, and the other side of that is actual humanity, obviously.
Yeah.
So that gap is when you see a robot that is mostly human, but clearly isn't quite human.
Yeah.
And that weird sort of sensation you get, like, oh, that's unpleasant, that's the uncanny valley.
Yeah.
One of the great creepy prompts I ever heard was that the existence of the Uncanny Valley implies that there's an evolutionary reason why we are frightened of things that look human but aren't, which is a great idea.
It's a great idea. So the uncanny is all to do with something familiar being kind of a bit wrong.
Yeah.
So the reason I didn't watch this movie the first time around is because of the Uncanny Valley, because it just freaked me the fuck out when
everyone looks sort of human but doesn't move correctly, basically.
And it doesn't help that I think... I feel less actually frightened than I was.
You've got used to it.
Got used to it a bit more, and actually it's largely the plot that's really objectionable. But it doesn't help that Tom Hanks is everyone. That really doesn't help.
It's weird that he's everyone, and also because he's so recognisable, when you're looking at something that looks mostly like Tom Hanks but a bit wrong, that is deepening that effect, I feel.
I've also got a bit of a question as to why bother doing this. Like, genuinely though, because... surely the point of, if you're going to use this technology, is to do something really incredible. So, for example, this kind of motion capture stuff was used to make Gollum really famously, right?
Yeah.
And it's amazing because you get Andy Serkis, who's one of the best actors ever, to do this incredible performance that's then translated into this amazing-looking creature that isn't a puppet, couldn't have been a person in a suit, is something in between all those things, right? I think that's a really beautiful example of why I use motion capture.
Yeah, and I mean, I think probably the same year as this, or around this time, Andy Serkis was then King Kong as well.
Yeah.
Right? Because Andy Serkis, and he's a lot of the apes in the Planet of the Apes remake series, which is really good.
Also really brilliant. Yeah. But what they've done here is they've motion captured Tom Hanks to then do Tom Hanks wearing a hat and a moustache.
Yeah, you could have just got Tom Hanks to grow
you could probably you could have even done a little wig.
Yeah, you could have just given him a lip merkin.
Most of the characters... and basically all the characters in this are just
people.
People.
Yeah.
The elves are just small people. They're not gremlins. They're not a different colour.
They're not magical in any way. They're just
minions
little,
or smurfs. Yeah. They're just small, angry white men.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand. And the train largely does basically things. I mean, I was looking at 2004. What other things did we have that were around this time? The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
So... we can do, at this time in 2004, big CGI stunts.
Although, as I said, the issue with The Day After Tomorrow is that all the CGI in that is architectural, or it is atmosphere, or it's scenery.
Yeah.
It's not people. We couldn't do people yet, and this
just proves
it.
But why are we doing people, though?
I don't know.
Because surely the point, then, is to take people and put people in situations which people can't be in. So the train flies up to the moon and the children are flying with it, and like they're doing all this stuff that like it would be really hard to get an actor to do it. But the train doesn't do those things for the most part.
The train mostly just rolls along tracks like an actual train.
Yes. So why not just have a fucking set of a train and actual Tom Hanks with a moustache on?
Or even have actual Tom Hanks and actual actors inside a magic CGI train. Robert Zemeckis made this, who made Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is the entire gimmick of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, is that you've got people and cartoons interacting with each other as though the cartoons are fully real.
At no point does the conductor take his hat off and a beard grows magically from CGI, and he grows and he's Santa and he morphs. The characters don't do things that, nearly all of them don't do things that humans can't do. The only exception is the magical hobo who turns into like Frost.
Yeah, but again, you could CGI
briefly,
that as a shot.
But you could have just CGI'd that. So I don't understand why we bother.
No.
It doesn't feel like a good use of this tech.
Well, the reason that I never saw this was I wasn't sure what the appeal of this was meant to be. Like I say, there's a very baby boomer nostalgia thing about trains. Like, there's a certain generation that really likes trains. I am not of it. I don't think, oh, cool, a train. I see them very much as a functional thing, so that doesn't appeal to me. And I don't get, like you say, why do we need to do everything in CGI for this?
Yeah.
It's a little bit similar to The Irishman, the Scorsese movie that they did with De Niro and Pacino and Joe Pesci, where they digitally de-aged them for some scenes, but then, like, did it badly. People on YouTube have deepfaked scenes from The Irishman way better than the actual finished product, where they sort of weirdly de-aged and then re-aged them to the point where it looks slightly wrong.
It's uncanny.
Yeah, again, it's slightly uncanny. Yeah. Whereas, like these days, we did have the technology to do that better, and somehow we didn't. And they just keep doing this thing, this stuff with technology. Like, I made the flippant Jurassic Park point, but it's true. They're obsessed with seeing what this can do, and they shouldn't, right? Mm-hmm. Just do a demo reel and show it to each other, rather than dragging the fucking audience along with
you. You're not doing what this could do, because surely the point of having this technology is that you can do incredible stuff that you can't get an actor to do. So, like, this character who looks like a human could turn into water or do anything, but they don't do that.
The only thing that we're really using it for is to do those first-person swoopy roller coastery shots sometimes, or do the ticket thing.
Humans aren't usually involved in
those
shots.
No, exactly. You don't need them to that. And if this is just an excuse to do those set pieces, then everything else needs to be... Like, there are some... Like, pornography and kung fu are the two genres where you're allowed to just do the set pieces and nothing else, right? Nobody's watching a porn film going, this is all well and good, but it's not delivered the rest of those pizzas. I mean, other people are going to be hungry, you know?
I'd like to say, that is a Luke Haynes rule, not a kind of film school rule, but
I'm just saying, if Jackie Chan blunders into the back room of a hardware store where for some reason there's a drug deal going down and declares that he doesn't want any trouble, nobody's going to go, oh, well, all right, boys, he said he doesn't want any trouble, let's not all rush him. You're going to get to the bit that you want to watch, right? Those are the sort of films where you're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And this just seemed like it wanted to do the big swooshy CGI stuff. Crowbarring the rest of this shit around it doesn't work.
It did. Now, Luke, there's a lot of shit. I have a lot of points. So I'm going to try and speed up a little bit.
Sorry.
It's okay, don't worry. So, my problem number two is that it's really needlessly threatening, like you said.
Yeah, the tone is weird.
The tone is so dark and aggressive, and I don't understand why, because the film is supposed... What it wants you to do, it isn't a dark Christmas story.
No.
It's supposed to be whimsical. There's a fucking two musical numbers in it.
Get on board this magical train to the North Pole.
That's the whole appeal of it.
Yeah.
The conductor character is a large part of this, because he's just really angry. There are arbitrary rules that he's enforcing The hobo is frightening. Like we said, the children look like they're abducted.
It's actually pretty accurate to how scary it would be if an actual hobo tried to make you get on a magic Christmas train, right? Like, get on the train, just do what I say.
For no reason, there's just this whole section with horrible abandoned toys that are really shouting at the main guy. And like I said, what this adds up to is it's not fun peril. It's not fun Christmas peril, where, like, I feel like in a Christmas movie, I should be like, oh no, they've ruined the turkey. Not like, oh, these children are going to get mangled.
There's a weird hobo on the roof. Hey kid, do you believe in ghosts?
So that is really weird. The central character's arc is a really, really big problem. And I think it's really telling that they haven't given them names because they also haven't really given them proper emotional depth or truth.
Well, they can't really have emotional depth because their faces don't move and they're dead behind the eyes.
The gall at the end of a film that's really about nothing to fucking literally stamp out what the message is that each character has learnt by the end of this and hand it to them and explain it. Yeah. That made me want to punch the fucking screen. I would have done, but I'm too frightened to get that close. So I wanted to...
Billy's ticket just said, fuck you, you're poor.
So is one of the first notes I wrote down was, is this journey of a kid toward a kid believing in Santa, is that an interesting enough arc to hang a movie on? Because he's supposed to be about sort of 11, 12. He seems to be reaching an age where actually it's completely natural and normal that he doesn't believe in Santa anymore. But the biggest problem is that we don't understand what that is supposed to mean to him. And the comparison that I will give you is The Grinch.
Right.
So, in the movie The Grinch, Cindy Lou Who is worried that Christmas has been lost. And she sings a song, but not that Christmas has been lost, but in a kind of spiritual way that the Whos are into consumerism. No one really cares about what Christmas is supposed to mean anymore.
Right.
People aren't being kind of, you know, generous or kind or community spirited. And she sings this song, Where Are You Christmas? I Want to Find You. And it's a real tearjerker. And that's because, and I know
you're find you so hard. Sorry.
Stop it. Stop it. It's you when she sings that song, which is her character's like I want song, right? The main character telling you what she wants. It's a song that is about grief of having lost something that really matters to her, that was really special to her at one point. She doesn't seem to find it. And the idea of losing Christmas is actually kind of a deeper thing about losing her innocence and her childhood.
Yeah.
So there's a real like emotional truth, which is about the grief of growing up and kind of maybe seeing the world for how it really is, not how you want it to be, that is something every person goes through of like you think what things are like magical when you're a kid and you gradually get disillusioned and it's kind of heartbreaking to watch a little kid go through this process.
Yeah.
So it's really moving. So her quest to find Christmas, to try and reignite it, is it even there or have I just been an idiot this whole time and I need to grow up, is genuinely, I find it really genuinely moving. Yeah. I think it's rooted in something. But by contrast, this kid, he just is growing up. We don't know why he cares about if Santa's real or not. It's the entire premise is, does Santa exist?
Yeah.
But we never see the consequences of Santa not existing for him. Yeah. He just seems, and also, like, that is just, growing up and realising that Santa's not real, sorry guys, is just a normal rite of passage. Is the happy ending that this movie's suggesting, he always believes in Santa forever as an adult.
Because you can still hear the bell, the magic bell.
Yeah.
And also, fuck you, Billy.
You can't just say that for everything. That's what I'm going to say.
I think Tom Hanks' narrator should have had an extra line. I don't know whatever happened to Billy. I think he got into crystal meth in the end. And I see him sometimes on the street. No teeth.
The characters, we don't understand why this journey that he's going on, both physical and emotional, matters. We don't know what will happen if he doesn't. If he doesn't fulfill this kind of journey. And then literally later, we don't know why. I'll get onto that as well. We don't know what the fuck is going on with the train. In fact, that is the point four. The rules of the world are really unclear.
Yeah, there are no stakes. If there are, we don't know what they are.
So at 33 minutes in the movie, Tom Hanks' angry conductor says, there'll be no Christmas unless the Polar Express reaches the North Pole. Am I the only one who understands that?
Well, yes.
Yes. Yeah. At that point, we both went, we've got no idea. Yeah,
because that's the first time we've been told this by you in that sentence.
Yes.
So you are the only one.
Why will Christmas not happen if the Polar Express doesn't get there on time?
Yeah.
Why? What would stop the Polar Express getting there on time if the train is magic?
Yeah.
It's not a literal journey to the North Pole.
Is the train magic? Because it seems to suffer it seems to suffer a lot of mechanical faults that they have to fix.
Why
mechanically?
Why are you angry if a child has lost a ticket that you only just gave them? You know she has a ticket.
Yeah.
Issued the tickets.
The tickets magically appear in your pocket when you board the train. If she's on the train, by definition, she has a ticket. Yeah.
There's only like 12 kids on this train.
Yeah.
Even though the train's really long.
Yeah.
What's happened to the children in the other compartments? What are they full of?
They're full of the dead toys that are still somehow...
So we don't... And then even when we get to the North Pole, it's not clear why we're there. Oh, we've got to see Santa, or Santa's got to give out the first toy now. That's a thing we care about.
Yeah.
It's just really unclear why we're on the train, what can happen with the train, how magic the train is.
Not very. I think this is a big bullet point for what's wrong with the whole thing, right? How magic is it? Not very. And that's the problem.
It is a really big problem. Yeah. So, point five of what is a problem with this, I've just written that fucking song.
Oh, yeah. That was.
I think apart from it being just not to my taste, right, narratively, it's completely unearned.
Yeah.
Because Billy hasn't been too shy to speak, but now he's suddenly singing.
Yeah.
But people haven't not tried to make contact with him before.
Yeah.
And like you said, he sings the song about the magic of Christmas and she sings it with him and everything's healed. But then instantly he doesn't want
to meet Santa because Christmas sucks for him. Yeah.
So there's nothing earned in that song. There's nothing. It doesn't change anything.
I always find it weird when like most of the way into a film, they suddenly have a song. Like you have to set out your stall and say there's going to be songs in this pretty early on. Aside from, like, the brief Hot Chocolate
song
and
dance
number,
that
didn't really count. That wasn't a proper, like, song. That was just a bit of dicking about, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I agree. Song's awful. There's no more songs.
No, it's just that one.
There's two songs in the whole thing.
Well, I'd say one and a half, really. Also, Tom Hanks shouldn't sing in anything ever, but that's it.
Point number six. Yeah, like we said, it's nowhere near magical enough. And part of this is that the obstacles that the characters are trying to overcome are largely admin-based.
Yeah, at one point they have to stop because there's something on the line, which is a problem that you get on the Southwest Rail.
It's not like there's not enough holiday cheer. That's what this train runs on. We've seen the train. It runs on coal. They've put the only black child to work on it.
Yeah, people aren't being jolly enough. No, there's just something on the line. The brake's broken. We've lost the
pin. The hot chocolate is the only magic thing that happens.
I had a hot chocolate this morning. I mean, it's not that magical. Nice, but
the issues are largely like mechanical or interpersonal obstacles. I'm like, this is a fucking magic train at Christmas to the North Pole. Can we not have a magic problem?
No, we just got a cranky hobo, some haunted toys, the conductor's an arsehole, and the poor can go fuck himself.
I mean, my point number seven is that he doesn't deserve it at the end. He doesn't deserve Santa to choose him.
He's kind of a dick, that kid. He hasn't really done anything other than cause problems.
Yeah, the only reason that he takes the other girl's ticket isn't because he thinks that she needs the ticket. Mm. It's because she has gone into the carriage with the conductor and he wants to go and see what's going on. Mm. It's not for her in any way, which is what he then later claims it is.
I thought he was trying to take her ticket in case she got... But then she's with the conductor.
So that entire problem is completely caused by him.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's bullshit.
It doesn't serve it. And then also, do you know what else? I'll get onto this as part of my fixes. He's got a fucking sister who he never mentions, his little sister, that he's going to get a present from Santa for his little sister.
No, fuck her.
Fuck everybody. Fuck Billy.
Yeah, it's a very sort of Reaganomic Christmas there.
Yeah. Like,
fuck everybody else. Fuck the poor. I want mine.
And then just for a movie that has so little emotional weight that is trying to occasionally just crowbar in sentiment.
Yeah.
The fucking stamping out the meaning of what we've all learned, what each character's learned and overcome. I was like, they didn't learn that. His ticket says that he needs to believe, but you don't have faith in something by literally getting proof of it. That's not what the
That's not belief, that's just factuality.
So, well done, you've got the magic of Christmas now. You literally met Santa.
Yeah, that makes it very easy. This is the whole point of faith.
Yeah.
Is you have to take it on faith, not on meeting it in person at a train factory in Illinois.
Billy's told that like his main gift is that he's got friends and that he has to learn to depend on them, except for his friend, one of whom is like apparently quite affluent, got a chance to give him a present that he really wanted from Santa that wasn't guaranteed. And he didn't. So why should Billy trust anyone?
We spent a fun and mean couple of minutes speculating on what was in Billy's magic present when he got home. My vote is it's the pack of cigarettes that his dad went out for about 4 years ago. But it's... who cares about Billy? Nobody in this movie.
Oh my god. Okay, I do have fixes. Do you have anything that you want to say?
Oh no, I think you've covered most of it. I can't fix this. I just don't know why any of this. Apparently it's based on a book, which is quite a beloved children's book. Maybe the book is better.
Well, I mean, it's written by the guy who made Jumanji. That's good.
He has quite a pedigree,
so. Okay, all right, my number one fix. Could we make it less threatening?
Yeah.
Speaking of someone who won the UK Theatre Award for Best Show for Children and Young People for a Christmas show, I've done two large family Christmas shows.
Mind your toes, people. Clang!
I tell you what, they weren't threatening.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a really big note I got from all the producers.
Yeah, you took out the hobo with the knife section from yeah.
One of the ways that this could be less threatening, there are lots of ways it could be less threatening, but I think one of the principal ones is that we need a guide character.
Yeah.
So very often, I'm going to slightly reverse back up. Christopher Booker wrote this thing called The Seven Plots, which is basically, there's only seven stories in the world. It's kind of his thesis, big, huge, fat book, which I pretended to read because it was on my syllabus.
Yeah.
But dipped in and out of, it's very long. But his point is there's only seven types of stories. There's quest narratives.
Yeah, there's a stranger comes to town.
A fish out of water, overcoming the monster, right?
Yeah.
This is a very, very classic. I think this would be called something along the lines of like a voyage away and home. Someone leaves their home, goes on a magical journey and comes back different, right? It's a very classic story. The Wizard of Oz.
So the seventh type of plot is just fuck you, Billy.
So, God, desperately trying to hold on to my points while you just make non sequiturs next to me.
Yeah, that is the show. What are you new here?
Okay. When our hero is entering an unfamiliar situation, not just to him, but to us, we've never been on the Polar Express. We don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Usually what you get is a guide character. You get somebody who is going to introduce you to this world and explain it to you in some way so that you understand what is happening. Now, guides can come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. The only kind of guide we get, and he's not really a guide, is the conductor. He just barks instructions. His rules are arbitrary. He never explains what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We don't understand what we're supposed to do, and it's really unmooring, and it adds to it being threatening because you've just got this train carriage of abducted children in the night who don't know where they're going.
Yeah. It's a hard sell to make that whimsical at the best of times. Yeah.
So either you make the conductor less of this capricious asshole where you're never quite sure if you're going to get shouted at or killed or what's going to happen. And also, I don't know why he's human. Make him like an elf or something.
Yeah.
But or I thought, what if we had this conductor and he's the mean one, but he's got like a blundering, lovable polar bear sidekick who's trying to do the tickets and he explains to the kids and he's lovely. And then we would feel safe in this world.
What if the conductor was a penguin, right?
Yes.
But it's a penguin that can only speak penguin. So that's why you're not sure what's going on, because it just turns like, meh. And then like, trying to get you to go on the...
But it would be less threatening than Tom Hanks towering over you with his moustache.
Going, hurry up, we're late, get on this train.
Exactly. Or I thought we could have like a Mrs. Potts tea lady character who brings the hot chocolate. We need someone warm and welcoming.
Where did those waiters come from or go to? There are about 20 of them in that one scene.
I don't know, and they're all identical.
Yeah.
Or the other option is that the other kids on the carriage go on the Polar Express every year.
Yeah.
So that they know, but we need someone to welcome us into this world, tell us it's safe and it's okay. Not literally tell us it's safe, but because they are a relaxed and comforting presence and they have that effect on our main character, the audience could relax into the fact we're just supposed to take it because it's Tom Hanks that it's all right. But even this screen grab we've got up on the telly is frightening.
Yeah, it is. And what's weird
he
is
he looks
that
like Crippin.
I think the same year Tom Hanks was in The Road to Perdition, which is a good movie, but he's woefully miscast in that as a mafia hitman, right? Tom Hanks should never have to play a mafia. It doesn't work. It's a bad choice in that. But he's really scary in this one screenshot that we're looking at right now, because like, if they made him a CGI hitman and everybody else was still human in Road to Perdition, he would have been way scarier.
This movie needs to be, it's a fucking Christmas movie about a magic train and a child's belief in Santa. It needs to be magical and fun and light. Like, you shouldn't feel on edge during this movie, and you do. So I think that we need a warm and welcoming guide that would make us feel safe in this unfamiliar territory. And then you can have things that are a bit more dangerous because you've got someone to kind of lean on and like ask questions to. Do you feel all right? Okay. Number two, I'm going to put a lamp on. It's glowing dark in here now. Okay. We need to have an emotional truth at the centre of this, right? So I think the arc of boy who is becoming a teenager stops believing in Santa and he needs to believe in Santa again. I don't find that moving.
No, like I say, that's just a thing that happens. Also, it's slightly awkward to make him sort of, I think maybe he's a little bit younger than we think he is, because there's a sort of nascent romance with him and the girl.
Yeah.
And it's like he's getting to a sort of awkward boner age if he's 12, right? Which is the only thing that can make this film more disturbing. So
I mean, again, it's very unmoored. I don't know what year this is. I don't know how old this kid is. This kid doesn't have a name.
It's told in a flashback from the narrator, played by Tom Hanks, funnily enough. And he said, like, a long time ago when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So we have to assume, like, when Tom Hanks was a kid. Was Tom Hanks about 65? So, yeah.
I don't know, but do you know what I mean, though? Like, the pyjamas are kind of roughly sort of, it's vaguely 40s-y.
Yeah.
50s-y, I guess.
I don't know. Anyway. If Tom Hanks is 10 years old, that would put it about, what, 1970? Okay.
But we need to know why this journey matters, right? Yeah. And it's not difficult, you know, it's going to be about believing in Christmas or believing in love or something. So yeah. This is my fix for this. Yeah. Okay, plot fix. He takes his little sister on the train.
Yeah.
His little sister comes with him. His little sister is desperate to see Santa. He's like, oh, okay, like, oh, if you're going to go on this fucking weird train, I'm coming with you because yeah. I'm your big brother and I'm going to look after you.
And I care about
you. And I care about you. So that would make us, it would give him something to do. His job is to look after his little sister yeah. and make sure she's okay.
Can I note your
go
idea?
On.
What if the sister goes on the train every year because she believes in Santa and he sees her getting on the train, like, where the hell is she going? Why is
yeah.
there a train? Yeah. And then he follows her on.
He follows her
and
on to make sure she's all right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it would both give him an action to do, and it would make us like him because he's doing a nice thing.
Yeah.
He's looking after his little sister. So maybe all the way through, he thinks that he's humouring her and protecting her.
Yeah.
And he's like, basically, his flaw that he needs to have is that he is, like, cynical and world-weary about Christmas. He's too grown up for this shit. He doesn't believe in it. So the emotion... And then she is all about having fun. She's still a little kid. He's transitioning out of being a little kid. So the movie is about him being in that liminal space where you're, you know, not a girl, not yet a woman. And as Britney Spears once told us... But about growing up and about, like, believing in the magic of it, and through being with his little sister and all of the, like, fun escapades, he finds the joy of Christmas. And maybe what he finds isn't that he needs to believe in Santa.
Yeah.
It's that it doesn't matter. It's about being joyful and childlike no matter how old you are.
Yeah.
And that being an adult isn't about being cynical.
Yeah, that's nice.
Thank you. Isn't that a moving idea for a story?
Yeah, isn't that a better idea than whatever we've ended up with here?
Thank you very much. Okay. So... Point fix number three.
Yeah.
We need a lot more magic in this.
Yeah.
Why does the train not fly? Why doesn't it go under the ice? Why doesn't it dance through the northern lights?
Once again, directed by Robert Zemeckis, who made the Back to the Future trilogy, which literally has a flying train that Doc Brown makes at the end. It's like, we know he can do this. There's more magic in science-based Back to the Future than there is in this magical Christmas story, by definition, because it has an actual flying train, whereas this train is stuck being just a fucking train.
All the way through this movie, I was willing something to happen. I was like, leave the tracks like the car at the end of Grease. Yeah. Oh, they're on the ice and the ice is cracking. Guess what, kids? It's an aqua train. Now we're under the water. We're swimming with the seals.
That'd be cool.
And the narwhals. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What about if the train just stops and it starts travelling on the northern lights? That's how you get to Santa's house.
Yeah.
Maybe the train can transform into all different things, like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Maybe not everyone on the train is a human.
Yeah.
Maybe it's staffed by penguins or elves or magic. It's a fucking magic Christmas movie. That is CGI.
Yes. You can do whatever you want with CGI, and what you've done is badly recreate a man we already know several times.
I think the epitome of this is that, like, there's caribou or something on the tracks, and they shoe them.
Yeah.
That's the magical solution magical...
They pull that hillbilly's beard until he screams, and his screams of pain drive the caribou away. And again, that is what happens in the movie. I'm not making that up.
Okay. It just should... Why does Santa's North Pole look like industrial bits of Chicago?
The engineer on the train was played by Michael Jeter, who was dying at the time and actually died before he finished all of his voiceover. So we torture a dying man. We pull a hillbilly's beard, voiced by, I believe, a dying AIDS patient. And that's the level of joyful whimsy that we're actually at in this film.
The elves look like they drink before work.
Yeah.
And they've got stubble.
Yeah, like, they all look like baseball team from the 20s. They have that sort of hard face quality that's
just, it just needs to be, why isn't it beautiful and whimsical and lovely?
Yeah, or at least soft.
Yes.
You don't even have to be like magic, just like have a soft edge around here somewhere rather than the relentlessly hard quality that everything
has.
It
is a magic train because I don't think he lives somewhere that they can get to the North Pole within under an hour.
Yeah.
On the tracks.
But then also, like, Tom Hanks's conductor has everyone's Tom Hanks. The conductor has a magic pocket watch that the time never moves on. So it's always 5 to 12 until Santa declares it to be Christmas. So it's like just, that, so that's magic. The timekeeping is magic, but everything else is...
It's not fun. No, it's just not fun.
Just no fun.
It's not fun, and it's not exciting in a like the set pieces should be like so magical and wonderful that you've been completely transported, instead of just feeling again like those children have got real bones that are really going to crush against that yeah. real ice and those metal wheels that are screeching on real tracks.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. Number four, cut the song. We don't need the song.
Yeah.
If we're doing songs, they need to be fun songs. They need to be good songs. We're not having the song. The song's completely unearned. The main whimsy song. Let's cut the terrifying puppets.
Yeah, they're weird.
Why have we got that?
If you're going to have broken toys that Santa is going to fix and repurpose, have them be sympathetic rather than terrifying would be a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, like Wheezy the Penguin in Toy Story, yeah. right? Like his squeaker's broken, but we like him for it. You yeah. know? That's cute. We enjoy that. But not they don't make him a sort of deranged serial killer who can't squeak anymore and become bitter about it. And it's like sharpening a shiv in the corner that he's made out of whatever he found.
He really hates this child yeah. he's just met. Yeah. I mean, the Polar Express is apt because this movie is cold.
Yeah.
It is stone cold all the way through. Okay, so I have got a kind of arc for this story, right?
Yeah.
So another big problem is, what are we trying to achieve? We don't know what the point of the journey is or what the stakes are of the journey. We don't quite understand what's going to happen if the train doesn't get there. Can the train not get there? But the train's magic, all those things. We also don't really understand what this is going to mean to this kid. Like, yeah. it's not going to mend his broken heart or anything like that. So if we go with this fix, so his flaw is that he's growing up too fast and he thinks that being an adult is being cynical, yeah. right? And being kind of in that way that we all sort of do when we're teenagers, yeah. we like try too hard to be a grown-up yeah. and kind of eschew childish things to prove that we're not childish. So his journey that he's going to go on needs to be about rediscovering wonder and joy.
Yeah.
So like you said, they are, and also, so, okay, if we're getting this train to the North Pole and it has to get there on time, which yeah. is fine, that's good to have a clock, to yeah. have some pressure on the situation, yeah. we have to get the train there. Why? Does it have a toy delivery? Does it yeah. have Santa's special address book in it and Christmas won't happen without it?
Yeah.
Is it just that his little sister needs to meet Santa and Santa's going to fuck off at midnight, so yeah. we have to get there on time to see Santa or yeah. like her dreams are going to be crushed yeah. because she's been wanting to do this thing. So we need to have a clear objective of why the train is getting there on time, why yeah. it matters, why Christmas won't happen. So he is being really dour and boring and grown up, and he's only there to help his little sister, and he's like, we've got to get there on time. Maybe he's the one that's kind of policing people
yeah.
and being kind of overly... He's being a killjoy.
Yeah.
So the kids want to stop and have like a snowball fight with the penguins and yeah. do a dance. And then like there's...
No, we've got to be... Yeah.
yeah. And like, well, now we've got to... Oh, look, we can like fly on the Northern Lights. And he's like, no, we've got to get there on time.
Yeah.
So his little sister like keeps trying to derail the train basically yeah. because to have fun. And yeah. maybe she's like a bit of a troublemaker because her whole thing is really good.
Girls just want to have fun.
Exactly.
I can do female pop hits too in this show.
It's good when you have characters. A really easy way to differentiate them and make them have conflict is to just make them the opposite. So yeah. if he's joyless, you make her joyful.
Yeah.
And because she's a little kid, so that works. So he keeps trying to corral his little sister, who's this really fun agent of chaos who just keeps yeah. having dicking about and having fun with all these magical adventures with these fun characters that we are also enjoying.
And the ghost hobo, is he still
yeah,
there?
No, ghost hobo isn't there. And like, despite himself, he starts to enjoy it because yeah. she's fun and they're doing fun shit together. But they get to a crisis point because the train is not going to get there. Nowhere we're yeah. going to get there. There's something's happened. There's some big hijinks that mean the train is derailed. And he's absolutely devastated, right?
Yeah.
And he's devastated because it means so much to his little sister. But his little sister doesn't care, Luke.
Yeah.
Because his little sister got what she wanted, which was to have fun with her big brother.
Yeah. And maybe the train runs on love and belief. Or if they believe hard enough, it makes
exactly.
the train go again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then Santa turns up.
Yeah.
He doesn't get what he needs. He
at that train factory in Chicago where he lives, yes.
He doesn't get what he wants. He gets what he needs. This is a fundamental
If you try
thing.
Sometimes, you might find you get what you need.
You get what you need. But then because it's a Christmas movie, he also gets what he wants, which yeah. is to meet Santa. And they return. So his journey is about learning the true meaning of Christmas,
yeah.
which is about joy and love and having fun,
yeah.
right? If we're saying that, I mean, yeah. that isn't what the meaning of Christmas is. But let's just say it is. So we have an objective, a character with a flaw, but they have a goal that they're trying to achieve. They have obstacles on the way to this goal. Everything looks like it goes wrong at a crisis point, but then it turns out they get what they need. They get an emotional resolution.
Yeah. And give Billy a present, for Christ's sake. Like, someone treat Billy a bit better. And if we're going to have Billy in this, I mean, in your version, I don't think we need a Billy character.
We don't need a Billy character.
For Christ's sake, someone do something nice for him.
Yeah, but then you could have she befriends Billy. Billy hates Christmas and he's sad. And then the little sister's like, no, you should love Christmas. Because the girl character keeps saying to Billy, Billy's like, Christmas is really hard for me. Christmas just doesn't happen. And I was like, hard agree, Billy. Yeah. I have a really horrible time at Christmas. I had a miserable fucking time most of my Christmases because I had a very difficult family situation. And a lot of people do. A lot of kids do.
Yeah.
And we don't acknowledge that. And instead, the little girl just goes, but it's great. And it's like, well, maybe it's great at your fucking house.
Yeah, maybe you're having
you
a nice time.
You insensitive bitch. Yeah. Stop trying to harmonise with me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's, again, it's totally unearned. They just tell Billy that Christmas is good. They don't listen to his reasons for why it might genuinely suck
I
for
don't want to know what Billy's reasons are. I think it's too dark even for this film.
But again, it just tells Billy that he should be having fun. It doesn't help Billy have fun.
Yeah.
But that the little sister character could be like, oh, Billy, there's loads of stuff you can do that's fun. Like, you can have fun with me. I'll be your friend. Let's have a snowball fight.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then Billy would genuinely enjoy that and also genuinely have a friend.
Yeah.
I want to go back and rewrite this movie.
Yeah, somebody needs to. And but also
Polar Express 2.
The Revenge of the Polar Express.
No, not that.
Polar Express 2, Revenge of the Ghost Hobo.
I want to do the Polar Shuttle Bus.
Yeah, the replacement bus to the North Pole. It's the British version. Yeah, and also maybe just have actors or have it be a cartoon. It's interesting that apparently this only ever got as far as number 2 at the box office. It was beaten consistently by The Incredibles. Also all CGI, deliberately cartoonish. They all look like cartoons.
And they do cartoon things.
Yeah, and it's much better.
Yeah, it is much better. I mean, that's a complete... The visuals of it need a total overhaul.
Yeah.
And I think that it should be a CGI movie or a digital movie, a cartoon movie, because it should be about a magic train, not a normal train.
Yes, not a normal, boring train that's late and hurry up. And we'll make the only black person drive it for a bit.
This Tom Hanks screen... I'll try and put this screen grab somewhere in the show notes because he genuinely looks very frightening.
It's the cold dead eyes of a CGI character from this period, but yeah.
So I think we successfully fixed the Polar Express.
I think you've definitely fixed it. I didn't have a lot on this other than just this.
I know, but you were doing your best during that movie to take down all of the ridiculous plot turns that were kind of largely non-causal.
Yes, nothing mattered.
Nothing really mattered or held together. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to our first Christmas episode.
Yeah, I'm going to try and do a couple more before Christmas itself.
We've got a new listener who we should shout out to. Hi, Lucy.
Hello.
Hello, thank you for listening and for getting in touch to tell us that you're enjoying
it. I'm not saying that we're doing badly on this show, but we know individual listeners. We got one more. We're up to 6 now.
Excuse me, when you look at the stats, there's people all over the world downloading this apparently, or bots, but none of them ever reach out. So, how about you make our Christmas and reach out to us? Say hello. If you're a listener, we would love to hear from you because we just send this out into the ether. Unless people like get in touch, we don't know what's going
on. That's true, yeah.
You can get in touch with us, artsholepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. And then I think the rest of our socials are kind of, like I say, we're not doing Twitter anymore.
I'm on Instagram @scripttits. And also, if you are a script writing person or you would like to be, if you've got a little idea burrowing around in your brain and you think that sounded bad, but... not like a parasite, but like a in a nice way. Anyway,
start it again.
I've just launched a whole load of script doctor services. So I've been doing this podcast for ages. I've been doing it informally and on a recommendation basis, and I'm now kind of opening up this service. You can book me to be a script doctor for you, or to just have a chat about your creative idea. You can do that by visiting brobertswriter.com.
Yes, I have nothing to sell. Good night.
Buy our book.
Buy our book. And if you want to reach me, there's a magic train. It'll be around about midnight. It will be entirely full of ghost hobos, but that's on brand for me.
Fuck you, Billy.
Fuck you, Billy.